listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 183 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how's it going?
Going well. I'm getting excited for my trip out to Oregon. And, well, I guess it's still a ways away. I think it's about 3 weeks away. But not only will I be in the office with you every day, but I'll be playing at Al's Den every night for the week.
Oh, excellent. I need to pencil that in.
Yeah.
Chris,
you know, I thought you were actually going to be on one of the gigs because I asked Henry, who you play guitar for sometimes, to be the first featured guest on the Sunday night that kicks the whole week off. And he said yes, so I thought you were going to be with him, but it turns out he's doing his other thing.
His other thing.
The other guitarist.
He that shall not be named. No, Chris, it's one of my musical career goals to actually play a gig with you, because it just hasn't happened
yet.
How
has it never happened?
I don't know.
We've known each other for
You know too many better guitar players.
Oh, like you want to play like a guitar while I'm singing?
Yeah, we've played gigs where our bands have.
Oh, that's true. We have. Yeah, we played Hell with Hell and Morning a bunch. Okay, I don't know why I spaced that, but okay. Well, let's do that. We should make that happen. Let's book a world tour.
Well, I have been hatching a scheme for May, when both you and I will be at the Music Biz conference in Nashville speaking. I thought, how can I figure out a way that Chris and I can rent a studio in Nashville and do something cool that involves some of the podcast listeners, so I can use the studio as a CD Baby expense. Document it somehow and use it as some sort of content, but we have the pleasure of using a studio in Nashville.
And did you come up with an idea? And another question is, did you get my text message about this with my idea?
I did. I need to read it again. I got it when I didn't have a chance to, I wasn't in the right frame of mind to process the information. Yeah. But maybe if some of our listeners out there have some ideas, what could we all do together in a studio that could be documented, that gives us all the excuse to rent a cool studio in Nashville and have CD Baby pay for it? Whatever that is, you can email us or whatever, and we'll figure it out. Because part of the reason why I was speaking about that to you, Chris, was I was talking about, I was just in Nashville last week, and I left Nashville to go to Memphis to Ardent Studios with Small Town Poets to start recording our next record. And I was thinking about how, as much as time as I spent in Nashville, and I went to college there and lived in Nashville even for a while after that, and even though our label was based in Nashville, I've never recorded in a Nashville studio outside of the studio that Belmont had at the time when I was in college there. But I've never recorded in a studio in Nashville, and I thought, that is very odd to me. I've recorded a ton in Memphis.
I guess you guys were always driving to Memphis to do it, right?
Yeah, because Ardent, we were on their label and they own the studio, so they're not going to pay for us to record in Nashville if we don't have to. But their studio was amazing, and they had, the producer that we wanted to use. And so we went to Memphis, and then all the records we've done independently, we've done out of Atlanta, because one of the guys that played drums for us for many years, and he's kind of like the sixth member of the band, he owns a very nice studio in Atlanta that's had some very big records recorded at back in the day. Even Prince recorded at it back in the day. He didn't own the studio then, but he owns it now, and it's all his gear in the same room from way back in the day. But anyway, so we've been using that studio in Atlanta, so I've never actually gotten to record in Nashville. So we need to figure out a reason why, and I don't want to pay for it. So we got to figure out a way that we can make it a business expense.
Yeah, so anyone that's submitting ideas, just remember this has to benefit CD Baby somehow.
Yeah. We got to be able to document something.
Yeah.
Turn it into content.
Check my text message again and see if
that's intriguing. All right, I will.
Intriguing.
I will. We've got a few months to plan and figure things out. And maybe we can find a studio for free. Maybe they'll give us the time for exchange for a little publicity. We'll see.
I'm sure Jack White needs the business.
Yeah, he's really hurting. Tough times over there. But Anyway, I'm kind of coming off the high of being in the studio basically three and a half solid days. Barely saw daylight because we were in the studio just nonstop hashing it out. It was great, great fun, and I'm really excited. I think there's like four or five really strong songs that we've got that our fans will love. And so it's kind of like we're not done, and this is not a Christmas record. So there is no,
so you must you can have work on it for 5 years like you too.
Yeah, exactly. There is no like, this must be done by a certain date. Otherwise you have to wait a whole nother year. So that kind of hopefully doesn't work. I hope that doesn't work against us in this case that we, so we're trying to keep things moving. It is later this month, the 20th anniversary of our debut album. So we're trying to do some stuff around that. It's not going to be as grand as I had envisioned, just because of logistics and various circumstances with, you know, we don't own those master recordings. We are working with the label and they are, you know, wanting to help us, but, you know, they're in a different place now than they were back in the day. So
I did think
moving parts.
If like you too, you waited for 5 years to put the record out, you'd hit it just in time for the quarter century mark.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. So, but I'm very excited about what we're working on. And good stuff, I think, is coming. And yeah, I think we've got a very interesting subject to talk about today. This is one that I received multiple emails about from listeners asking, can you just do a podcast episode about what we need to do when we're just getting started? So that's what we're going to be talking about today. I think there'll be some nuggets for newbies. There'll be some nuggets for people that are, you know, on their fourth, fifth, and sixth album. But we specifically got asked by a lot of people, I just need to know how to get started and start building a career. What are like the baby steps, not the big overarching themes as much, but, and we're gonna discuss that. I think it's gonna be interesting. So that'll be coming up later. But before we get to that, we've got some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, big, big streaming news. Ed Sheeran broke the record for the most first week streams of any album, and he did it in just 5 days. The album was released on March 3rd, which it's been exactly a week as recording this podcast. Spotify has revealed that the British singer-songwriter's new album has officially broken the record for the greatest number of streams racked up by any one album in its first week on the platform. The 16 songs featured on Divided, that's the name of the album, have now been streamed an amazing 273 million times around the world. While a quarter of a billion plays is an incredible accomplishment, no matter how long it takes for a collection to reach that mark, what makes Sheeran's feat even more jaw-dropping is the fact that he was able to rack up that many streams in just 5 days. So that means that Divided already owns the record for the most streams in an opening week on Spotify, even though its first full 7 days haven't even been calculated yet. That 273 million figure is only as of Tuesday after the release, so when the numbers are all calculated and another two full days of streaming are tacked onto the currently available total, it's highly likely that Sheeran's third full-length will be named the first in history to accumulate at least 300 million streams in just a week. Before Divided was released, the previous record for the most streams in an opening week was held by The Weeknd, who set the high point last November with their latest Starboy. The chart-topping album saw its many songs played 223 million times in the first week. Ed Sheeran's Divided has also passed the 1 billion mark on YouTube. So some huge, huge streaming numbers. Well, we've got some big news ourselves here at CD Baby. We hit a major milestone. CD Baby's publishing administration service, currently offered in the US, Canada, UK, and Ireland as a part of our CD Baby Pro distribution package, now represents the single largest collection of songwriters in the world. We're representing over 625,000 songs and more than 100,000 songwriters, making sure they're collecting all the publishing royalties they're owed worldwide. We're also on the verge of introducing our publishing administration service to more European countries, including Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Sweden, Switzerland, and Spain, as well as Brazil, Israel, Mexico, and Singapore. And that's all through direct relationships with each of those countries' performing rights organizations. CD Baby Publishing has uncovered significant royalties worldwide for our songwriters, not just from key platforms like streaming services, but also more obscure sources like cruise ships, online piano lessons, and airplane music. Artist, songwriter, and CD Baby Publishing client Craig Cardiff spoke to the importance of CD Baby's service by saying, "Without CD Baby Pro Publishing, I wouldn't have been able to get any of the mechanical royalties generated from each and every one of my over 45 million streams on Spotify." To make sure you're collecting all your royalties, just select the CD Baby Pro distribution option when you distribute your music through CD Baby. Well, we've got some more Facebook news, and surprising, Facebook is in a slump. Whether it's younger users moving to different social networks like Instagram and Snapchat, general social burnout, or even the lead up to the US election, Facebook usage hit a slump in 2016. User engagement was down. Some details about it from Adweek. Between the fall of 2015 and the winter of 2016, Facebook experienced 7 consecutive months of declining user engagement. Starting in March 2016, the company began implementing 3 key algorithm changes focused on promoting posts that featured Facebook Live videos, keeping clickbait links out of news feeds, and prioritizing friends, family, and core value content. Facebook's algorithm changes were very effective, increasing user engagement over the course of 2016. Aside from a brief dip in the fall of 2016, user engagement increased steadily throughout the year, with an overall 26% growth in engagement per post. User-generated posts on Facebook earned 6.9 times more engagement than brand-generated posts. Facebook's 2016 algorithm changes put user-generated content front and center on people's news feeds and brand-generated content on the back burner. For marketers, this statistic underscores the value of being able to encourage not just anyone on Facebook to write a favorable post about their brand, but to encourage the Facebook users who are both fans of the brand and have high levels of influence. These are the people who will be able to truly move the engagement needle. So that's the news. Lots of interesting things happening that affect artists, independent artists. Comment on that Facebook one. I think it's interesting to note that as an artist, you are considered a brand on Facebook. The way you sign up and create an artist page, you're considered a brand. Unless you are still using, like if you're an artist like Chris, I think you have an artist page.
I do,
but
yeah.
But you could have also potentially have just done Chris Robley because you are a solo artist and that's your name. That could have been your Facebook feed. But so when you set up a brand page, it's important to know as an artist that those pages, they've defeatured them in the feed. So you'll notice that when you post as your artist from your artist page that, man, why when I've got 10,000 followers, did only 200 people see that post? And now you know why. They're defeaturing those things. But they've clearly shown that Facebook Live videos get extra promotion. And, you know, they're trying to keep clickbait out of the feed. So you don't want your content that you're putting up on Facebook to look like clickbait. And if you don't know what clickbait is, that's where sensational headlines and things that are just intended to get people to click that, when they follow through, it's not anything of interest or what they were planning on seeing. And that, you know, they're featuring family and friends. So it's more important to get people to not just like stuff, but actually get other people. So your top fans who have, you know, lots of followers themselves make the post from their page. So that's a challenge. And but it's good to know at least some insight into how the game is being played so you can go figure out how to make things happen.
Well, and it's also on the depressing side of things. It's at least nice to know that when I make a Facebook post and only 5 people like it, you know, you get this sense of like, oh, no one likes me. But there's a real reason behind that. You know, maybe no one likes me. That might be the case. But it's also the case that Facebook is, you know, we're not alone in being downgraded as the brand. But I was going to say about Facebook Live, we posted a couple articles in the past few weeks about a band who used Facebook Live in a pretty interesting way, I thought. You know, rather than just going to their gig and setting up their phone randomly in front of the stage and shooting some video of their show, they really were very deliberate about it. And, you know, so if you check those out on the DIY Musician blog, you might be able to integrate some of that into your own videos.
Yeah, and you never know, they might show up as a podcast interview.
Uh-huh.
We're in talks. We're in talks. But yes, and those are things that once you figure out how those things work and how you can use them to your advantage, it can be very powerful. Because we always get emails from people like, how can I reach fans without touring? Well, paying attention to this kind of stuff can be really helpful. Moving on to the Ed Sheeran thing, what I think is great about this is when we moved to a streaming world and people were freaking out, and there, I will acknowledge there's still a lot of transition happening. I'm going through it myself, where I'm trying to jumpstart the Small Town Poets back catalog that its heyday was before Spotify, trying to jumpstart it on that platform to get it, you know, the algorithm picking it up and it recommending things based on user preferences. That takes work, and there is a switchover. But when a lot of the freakout was happening, people were saying, hey, we used to sell a million albums, and equating a million streams to a million album sales, and assuming that a million streams would be just as hard as a million album sales. And so going, I used to make X amount, now I'm going to make pennies, because a million streams should clearly equal a million downloads, which is not the case at all. And I think this is proof. So you think about Ed Sheeran, I was doing some calculations of, you know, you can sort of calculate streaming revenue. You can divide it by 300 or 400, and that typically gets you to the dollar amount, or you can just multiply it by half a penny. It's give or take, depending on how people are using it, if it's a premium account or a free account. But anyway, that gives you some rough numbers. So really, you break it down, just from Spotify, this doesn't include iTunes, this doesn't include Apple Music or Amazon, all those other services around the world that someone like him, who's that big, is going to see significant revenue from. That was well over $1 million from just 1 week off of that one platform. So when you think about that, now we're starting to talk about, okay, how much was somebody who went platinum their first week out going to make? Well, less than $1 million, you know, because on average, you could say the artist royalty was probably $1 per album. But then there's, you know, the other junk that comes in. So really, it's almost like, and this is just Spotify. So it's really like he's sold 3-4 million albums in the first week. And it's really starting to feel like that's about right for someone who's a mega star like him. He's got 1 billion plays on YouTube in a week. He's got a 250 million on Spotify. All his other numbers are going to be massive. That's starting to feel about right.
Yeah. And lucky for him, he writes his own songs too. So
yeah.
Got all the publishing revenue coming in.
I think this really points to the idea that the fear of streaming was the 1-for-1 ratio, which just isn't correct. But the key is, and this is the key that I'll keep stressing to everybody, is we're going from a buying economy to a listening economy. And that seems stupid to point out, but it's really, you really got to pay attention to that, because lots of people bought albums and they liked one song. Lots of people buy albums and never listen to them again. Lots of people buy albums as gifts and they sit on a shelf in wrappers. You can go on eBay and see millions of CDs for sale that have never been opened. That means people never actually listened to that artist. That means they didn't care. When you move to a plain listening economy, it means people are listening. And those are people that are at least listening. They may not be diehard fans, but they're listening. And yeah, you have more potential from them than somebody who just managed to buy a CD or was gifted a CD that's thrown in the closet somewhere. You can't gift a stream.
And people can debate, you know, which format is better for the artist for new releases. But when you think about, like, your back catalog, you know, let's say you sold a CD to someone 10 years ago. That's great. But they were never going to give you another cent for that. But now, I guarantee they're not putting their CD in their car, stereo to hear your music. They're probably listening on Spotify, which means suddenly you're generating new income from these people who were never going to pay you another cent under the old model.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true from Small Town Poets. All our CDs of our back catalog are out of print. There is not another dime to be made off of those albums, but all the plays and streams happening on Spotify generating revenue. So I just thought that one was really interesting to point to. Like, when you think about the megastar releasing an album and the kind of numbers, I think these kind of numbers are going to start to be normal. And we're going to start seeing that, okay, we just got to start thinking about a playing economy over a buying economy. And all these 270 million streams, those are people that actually listened. And that's powerful. So I thought that was important to mention and highlight, because I think it points to where a positive place the industry's headed.
Yeah, I was curious when you were talking about that story, if he had an edge in terms of setting that record because the album had 16 tracks on it. Like, I don't know anything about that Weeknd album, but maybe that only had 10 or 12 songs. So
that's a good point. And that points to what Jack Conte mentioned a lot at our conference, which that keynote is going to be coming down your podcast feed in the next couple weeks or so. You got to get catalog out there. It's about release, get more music out there, because if people are listening, the way to generate more money is give them to more stuff to listen to. The more they listen, the more money you make. So if you've got one song out there and you just released a single and you're wondering why you're not making any money, that's because they can only listen to one song. Give them 100 songs to listen to, and your diehard fans are now generating far more revenue for you than they are with just one or two songs. So very important. I think that's a good point that you raised, that it does have 16 tracks. That was a smart move on their part.
Someone asked me last week if they were just, well, I guess, you know what? I'll save this point for the discussion we're about to have.
Okay.
It kind of related to the Facebook news.
Okay. Okay. Before we jump into our discussion, I want to mention I was just in Nashville preparing for the DIY Musician Conference 2017 that will be happening in Nashville in August. And I know a lot of you that listen to this podcast have come to the conference and plan to come. Early bird tickets are just $69. It's the same as it was last year. That will be going up near the end of April. But even more importantly than that, hotels in Nashville, especially the downtown area, are a premium. They're hard to find. They sell out really fast. And we are already getting close to pushing the hotel to being sold out of our discounted room nights. So if you're planning on going to the conference, get your ticket. Go get your hotel rooms now. And a couple important notes. We are starting earlier on Friday. Friday is going to be a full day, so is Saturday. And Sunday is going to feel like the Sundays that the conference has had previously, where it's kind of a half day. But Friday is going to be a full day. So I just want to make sure people are aware of that as they're planning their travel, that you want to get there maybe Thursday night. We're starting not super early on Friday, but I think like 10 a.m. is when things are going to kick off. So you want to be in town for that. Also, in the past conferences, we have only had the open mic on Friday night. We have a venue for every night of the conference, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday night is going to be an open mic like normal. Saturday and Sunday are going to be stages that we got to program, and we're going to be selecting people from the conference, people that have bought tickets to go to the conference. So if you want to get in on the action early, we're going to give priority to people that buy early bird tickets. You want to buy your ticket now. We're going to have more info about how to submit to be considered to play, but we're going to give priority to those who buy early bird tickets. The venues we have are, we've got on Sunday night, it's going to be kind of a closeout party. We've got two stages. It's one of the venues right on Broadway in Nashville. It's going to be a blast. It's called Tin Roof. Yeah, Tin Roof. The one on Saturday night is a really great venue in Nashville. I'm not going to say the name yet because we haven't inked the deal, but it's looking good. And that is going to be a really great place to play. I'm kind of jealous. I thought, man, I wish I could get my band to play. And then, you know, the Friday night thing, we've got BB King's in downtown Nashville rented out where we're going to do the open mic. It's going to run very much like last couple years. So get your tickets, more performance opportunities for you. Clubs everywhere right outside the door. It's going to be quite the scene. So I don't want people to miss out. And the Jam Room, which was a huge success last year, we have a Jam Room scheduled. The Jam Room is way bigger this year. And so we're hoping to fill it with gear and all sorts of stuff. And just that was a highlight that was, you know, we didn't know how it'd go last year and ended up being a huge highlight. So DIYMusicianCon.com, DIYMusicianCon.com. Go get your tickets and you will not regret going. The programming is going to be amazing too. So I'm excited.
Sweet. Are those second two performance nights going to be like showcase style, or like how long are the sets?
They'll probably be 45-minute sets. They will be decent sets. We're thinking about scheduling some longer sets and then maybe allowing, you know, having backline gear. So if somebody, you know, pulling some bands' names out of a hat and they can come up and play like two or three songs similar to the open mic. So we're looking at that possibility. There's just some logistics to work out, but we're trying to get as many people on the stage as possible, but also provide an opportunity for some artists to have some longer sets. We're also looking at some more performance opportunities just throughout the day at the conference itself. Music City is electric. When you are there, there's a reason they call it Music City in Nashville. When you are there, it is everywhere, and it just feels so amazing. And so to gather with all your artist community and be together and experience that inside of Nashville, I mean, I'm super excited to go. I'm excited to be there as an attendee, really. So,
and then we'll be there a couple months in advance trying to find a way to get into a studio.
All right. So we're going to be talking about for the rest of the show how to start your music career. As I mentioned at the top, we've gotten a lot of questions from listeners like, how do I start my career? I've got an album or I've been making some music, and I don't even know where to begin. So this is the premise that we're going to start with. You ready, Chris?
I'm ready.
So the artist persona, it's not really persona, I should say, but sort of the state they're in, where they're at in their career. This is what we're going to kind of set as the starting point for our conversation. It's somebody that has made an album or started recording songs, has already distributed, like they've put it up on CD Baby already, distributed it out through CD Baby, because that's everybody that's emailed me, that's been the case. And it's been, the question has been, I've not done this before, but I'm wanting to pursue a career as an artist. I did my first release and I just don't know where to go from here. I've not done anything. I haven't really even started playing shows. So we're gonna take the idea of like, this is somebody who would like to start playing shows, needs to kind of just get the foundational pieces in place in order to start making some good steps and progress to building out a career. So that's where we're going to start. So I think some of the things we'll discuss will be very helpful if you're brand new. I know we have a lot of listeners that are just brand new. And I think there'll be some of the things that we discuss that'll be helpful even if you have some releases out but you're getting in the release cycle again. Where we're not gonna go is, I'm gonna take it as someone, you know, who's really trying to make a career out of it. If you're just doing music as a hobby, which there is nothing wrong with that at all, if you're just doing it as a hobby, some of this stuff may not apply to you. I might give you different advice, we're just assuming that you're trying to take it as, you know, build a career, make things happen, build fans, and that's the direction you're trying to go. So that's kind of the ground rules for the conversation. So, Chris, Where shall we begin with this discussion?
Okay, so I think step one is you've put your CD out already. Now invent a time machine and go back in time and Google your band name or your artist name, because there might be another one out there. And if there is, you're going to get into lots of confusion in this digital world. Not just with fans confusing your material, but also digital platforms like Spotify or Apple Music combining your music with other people's music on profile pages. So make sure you're not using someone else's name.
You know what? I agree that that is an excellent first step, because
the time machine.
No, the idea of really just like, before you go any further, no matter where you're at, stop, go Google your band name. Go Google your personal name. If you're a solo artist and you're going by your real name, go Google that. You might find out that someone who shares the same name as you is a serial killer across on the other side of the country or something. There's things like that have really popped up where you're like, ooh, that I didn't want that. People searching and think, you know, to find that out. And so you may need to make an adjustment. So before you get any further, it's always good to stop and see if that name is going to be a problem. Because outside of Where Do I Get Started, I've gotten a lot of emails recently about that issue. And it's folks that have gotten just beyond the starting point and going, oh, man, what a bummer. We're really dealing with this issue.
Yeah, and I, even to this day, encounter, I guess you'd call them sort of local bands or regional bands, bands that are, you know, playing out a lot, but maybe didn't have their sights on a, you know, career or lots of ambitions of touring or anything. And they have these band names that are kind of generic. And I'm like, there's got to be another band out there like that. So, and if I look into it, of course, there's like four different bands with the same band name. And, you know, maybe that wasn't an issue if you really didn't have larger ambitions 20 or 30 years ago. But now with the internet, like, it doesn't matter if you're just only going to play in your town, because it's still confusing. Like, why be lazy? Just come up with something that's totally unique.
Yeah. And especially the earlier you can get in on this, the better. I mean, it may feel like some artists are like, you know, I don't care. It's premature. But if you actually are career minded, just do this now. It's free. Go to your computer, Google your name, investigate a little, think about, is it going to be hard for people to find me online? Even if you don't have your online profile set up, just see what comes up. And if you have a band name, even if it's already locked in on an album, I would still say this is get this work done early, because the next step that I would say is for somebody who's just starting, has some music out there, hasn't really focused on promoting or marketing or done anything yet, just building from scratch. The next thing I would say, next step, is to go snag a lot of the social platforms. Even if you're not using them, just go lock them down now so somebody else doesn't snag one and you're going, dang it, that was free, available 3 months ago and I didn't grab it, and now someone's using it and I have to add a whole bunch of like Chris Robley official or Small Town Poets official at the end instead of it being just what I want it to be.
Yeah. And when people, I was going to mention this earlier, someone last week asked me a question, said, I've been making music for a long time. I've never done anything online, really. What social platform should I be on? You know, kind of what's the bare minimum expectation? And I said, Facebook and YouTube. And then, you know, if you've got time, maybe Instagram and Twitter, optional. I would favor Instagram over Twitter at this point, but that was my advice to him. I don't know if you would have conflicting advice, but those would be the four that I would start with if you have the time.
Yeah, well, I would lock them down regardless. Even if you don't plan on using them or you haven't used them, you don't know how they work, I would say those are the four I would agree. Go lock those down. Get them with the URL you want. And it's nice if the URL is consistent. So, you know, for Small Town Poets, we're youtube.com/smalltownpoets. Same on Twitter, same on Instagram, same on Facebook. So that's, I think, locking those down, whether or not you use them yet, doesn't matter to me. Just take care of that business so you at least know that you can move forward and those things are there and you don't have to find out that another band somewhere started using the same name as you and grabbed them before you.
Yeah, and so another extremely important thing on this train of thought is your website URL. So while you're reserving all your social platforms, you really want to, you know, even if you've just started, you just got one bit of music out there, you haven't played shows, you need a website and you need to reserve it so no one else snags that name. So go to HostBaby or, you know, a web host and get them to reserve your URL.
Yeah, that's another key point, because especially if you find that your name is available, grab it instantly, because it is really hard, especially if you want a .com. Like, for example, Small Town Poets, our website is smalltownpoets.tv, because .com got swooped up by some squatters back when our band wasn't doing much, and then it's been sold and sold, and now it's basically gone into oblivion by spammers. And you know, the info online about who owns it is BS. Unless we wanted to pursue, you know, hire a lawyer, enforce trademark, we're not going to be able to get it back. So it's important to grab stuff while you can. And even if your band you're like, I'm not sure if this band is going to be, you know, like my long-term thing. Maybe I'll do a solo project in the future, but we still want to take it serious. Just get that URL. It's cheap. Most of them are $9. It's better to pay $9 and not use it for a year than to not pay it and find out you'll never get it. So that's another good thing to wrap up in the beginning.
Should we talk about building a website at this point, or should we wait a little bit?
We can wait on that. These are kind of the foundational things, like just take care of business. Okay, I'm serious. There's some music out there. Oh yeah, I should lock up those social networks. I should Google my name and see what's going on there before I get too far down the road with it. I should get the URL. So that's like some housekeeping. And, you know, I think getting a website online is important as well. But the one thing that I would recommend if I was going to spend money as a new artist is go hire a really good photographer.
Yes.
Because what you need to start doing is building a story online, and most of it's going to be visual. Everything in our world now is visual. So you can write, 1,000-word biography. No one's reading it. What they're going to look at is some photos. And if all you have is your album cover, and that's the only thing people ever see, they go to your website, there's an album cover, they go to all your profiles, it's that same album cover. The only thing you email out or post online is that same image. That kind of gives the idea that you don't have much going on. So to me, it's like, okay, if I'm going to spend any bit of money on anything before I hire a publicist, before I, you know, start spending money on ads or anything like that online, to me, my money goes to a photographer. But before I hire that photographer, I want to get more than just a band photo. I want to start thinking, okay, how do I represent who I am visually? And let me get some photos of that so I can start creating a compelling presence online, because that's going to make it more possible to get some gigs, to get some press and things like that.
Yeah. And so we have articles and podcast episodes on this topic. But another thing that's important to do is to discuss with the photographer all your different photo needs, which they at this point might have a better idea of than you do since you're just getting started. But that would be, you know, to have a landscape oriented photo, sort of a wide photo, a good, maybe a shot with your instrument playing, or, there's a whole bunch of different kinds of pictures you might need. Look at Facebook and Twitter and see where the little profile image might lay over the larger header image, and just get a feel for, you know, where maybe you should be standing in relation to the whole frame of the shot, things like that. So, and hopefully they can guide you through all that.
Yeah, thumbnail photos, stuff that works good square, stuff that works great landscape. There's an artist that we featured at Host Baby because he had a great website. He used Host Baby to build a great website, and he nailed it with the photos. It was like this classic car at the beach, but it wasn't just one picture. It was like all these different pictures that started to build like a theme. So it was like it wasn't that you saw the same picture over and over again, but you saw those elements. And sometimes you need some photos that are elements that you're not even in that just help provide a bigger backdrop for that scene. And that can even be also thinking, adding behind the scenes pictures and things like that. Like if you've got a home studio that you've been working out of, have the photographer take some photos of you in there working and writing and recording that feel more action oriented, more photojournalistic, less band photo. Because all these help tell a broader story. And if you're just starting out, that story online is going to be zero. And you need to start building that. Because when you start thinking about gigs or press or things, people are going to go to your social profiles. They're going to go to your website to try and gauge who are you, what do you have going on. And these things are big signals as to whether or not you're serious or not. Or they're having to make judgment calls. It helps them make a judgment call. They kind of get an idea of who you are. And even if they like your music, sometimes it doesn't even come down to the whether or not they like their music. If they've got two bands potential to feature, one, and then they like their albums equally. One has nothing but an album cover online. The other has a nice visual story. They're going to go with the one with the nice visual story. Just feels more real.
Yeah, and so now you keep mentioning story, which was one thing I had on my list to talk about. And it's a big thing, so maybe we'd be best just referring people to other podcasts we've done on the topic. But it's really tough to tell your story or convey it if you don't even know what it is. So, you know, that's one thing. I think we've mentioned how people get obsessed on how should I be marketing myself? How many tweets do I need to make a day? And the answer that we always say is like, well, not at all if you don't have anything interesting to tell. So, you know, what's your story? Do some soul searching, get together with your other band members or whoever and figure out who you are and who you want to be and who you want your fans to see when they're looking at you or reading about you.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to our Authentic Branding podcast, I would start there. That's, in fact, I think everybody that emailed me asking this question, how do I get started? I think I sent them a link to that podcast because it is really important for you to just focus and really understand who you are because those things become big strengths. And then they help propel you forward just naturally because people are curious instead of just trying to, you know, feel like you're beating against a wall with getting people to answer your emails or take notice.
Yeah, and if we're talking to new artists here that are just getting started, it might be worth just mentioning that even though your music is an audio art form, no one cares, no one's going to listen to it until they've been captivated by something else, a picture, like you were saying, Kevin, or something really interesting in the first two sentences of your bio, or, you know, it's going to be something else that brings them to your music. Your music's not going to speak for itself because they're never going to get to it unless your story captures them.
Yes, true, true. You know, you mentioned something that was on my list, or you alluded to it, I would say. You mentioned getting your band members together. And if you're in a band, one thing that I thought was interesting, if you're just starting out, it would be interesting if you can get everyone to cooperate, to have everyone just kind of write down what are your top three goals for this project. Not discuss, like not go, hey guys, let's talk about our top three things and everyone kind of have groupthink. But it'd be interesting to have, whether over email or people just write on a piece of paper, for them to write down what their goals are and see if you guys even have matching goals. Because I think it's important to just get everybody on the same page. Just, if you're just starting out, get everybody on the same page. If it's one person, like the lead singer of a band that's really ambitious and has plans, and everyone else is just like doing this for free beer, then you're going to have problems real fast. And it'd be better to just kind of do that assessment early on and sort of gauge, you know, what is even possible with this group of people, you know. If you're a solo artist, you can do it on a different level, but I think getting band members all on the same page is a challenge. I mean, it's a never-ending challenge.
Well, yeah, and I have an anecdote to back this up. So, you know Barbara Mitchell? She was a Portlander about 10 years ago. She was a manager. I think she managed, not Climber, who was it? Derby.
Yes, and, I'm sure I met her. I know the name.
Yeah, and she was a music critic in town. She had done a bunch of management. She had lots of connections in the Northwest music scene and beyond. And anyways, she liked an album I put out with my band, The Sort Ofs. And we went out to get drinks one night, and the drummer and I and her. And she asked, like, such a simple question. What do you guys want? Like, basically, what's your goal? And we both were like, we obviously the answer is we want to be wildly rich and famous and playing in front of hundreds of thousands of people at giant festivals.
But
in the moment she was asking for something specific. Do we want to be, you know, touring 6 weeks out of every 3 months? Do we want to be getting our music reviewed in this? What, you know, she wanted specifics, I could tell. And when we didn't have the answer, I felt like the whole moment was deflated because suddenly, you know, she has to interpret for us how she could help. Instead of if we had said, here's our goals, here's our 6 month goal, here's our 1 year goal, here's where we want to be in 5 years. She could then say, oh, well, here's all the ways in which I could help you achieve those. Here's the things I can't do, but maybe, you know, meet up with these people. And had we just taken like an hour or two to define that for ourselves, I feel like we could have had so much more help. So figure out what you want.
Yeah, I think the idea of showing up to some professional and going, here I am, make something out of me. Those days are long gone. From the monster of rock era of, you know, the 80s, where that seemed to be like you play the Sunset Strip and some industry guy shows up and grants you the blessing of being a famous musician. Those days are over. So if you don't know what you want to accomplish, then a lot of times you're just left hanging because people don't want to figure out who you are. They don't want to put a bunch of work into somebody who hasn't figured out who they are.
And same, like you said, same for solo artists. Like you might not have the benefit of the sounding board of your band to, you know, strategize with, but just sit in front of a Word document and type out what you want, type out what you think your plan will be. Cause then at least you've set it down and it'll be in your mind if anyone ever comes to you with those kinds of questions.
It's one of those things that, especially now, because a lot of the artists that we have these conversations with, their desired career path is so varied. And there are so many different options. I'll meet people that are like, I really just want to write songs for film and TV. Or I really just want to go tour the world and be this amazing live band that just people just drive for miles to see. Other people are like, you know, we want to make good records and release a lot of music and play live in our local market, but we really want to try and just have a release, you know, continue release strategy and be strategic there. There's so many different things you can do that you need to kind of map that out some and figure it out. Otherwise, you're going to be spinning your wheels a lot and probably getting really frustrated that nothing's happening, and not necessarily for lack of talent or ability, but just because you're just not pointed at anything.
Yeah, lack of focus in a way.
You brought up goals, and so I was going to mention that. Let's see, where's my notes here? There's two things. One, we talked a little bit about what you want to accomplish and kind of assessing that. And you mentioned that, you know, dream artists or dreamers. We want to be like, we want the world singing our songs. We want the recognition for the, you know, our artistic craft. But, you know, really putting some more tangible things. What does success really look like for you? Because a lot of people have those big dreams, but then, you know, of course I still have those dreams, but I've got a family and two kids and, you know, being away 300 days out of the year, that's just not an option for me. So where realistically, I think really assessing what you can accomplish and making sure that what you want to accomplish and what you can accomplish are in line. And then also, I think really doing some good self-reflection. You know, we're talking about someone that's just started. And even if you haven't just started, everyone thinks their latest release is the most amazing thing. And that's one of the things I love about artists. It's like, I do it. I'm like, I'm so amazing. Or not, I'm so amazing. I'm so excited about this release. This release is amazing. It's the best thing we've ever done. If people just hear this album, I've said that myself a bunch. Lots of people have said it to me about their new release. And I think that's the amazing thing about artists. We get really invested in our art. It's very meaningful to us. And so we just feel that everyone else should capture that meaning along with it. But
I'm laughing because I'm imagining someone's like pitch for their new record being, my new record is really adequate.
it's adequate.
It's not noticeably less of lesser quality than the rest of my catalog.
It's adequate. That's funny. That would be hilarious. I'd listen to that record. But I think when you get done with the project and you're like, I'm new, I want to take on the world, my music's amazing, it's like you need to step back, let the dust settle a bit, and then start doing some self-assessment about where you're really at with this album. It may be that your first album is just like, oh my gosh, where did this person come from? This is mind-blowing. It might be that it's like, yeah, that's a good first step. This person has potential. It might be, this may not be the one that we really get behind, but it was a good first effort for us to just start the ball rolling. So you need to figure out really where you're at in there. And I say that because lots of artists, they start spending money, they start doing things, they start trying to build relationships. And it's like, there's certain levers you should wait to pull until you know you're ready to pull that lever. Because sometimes once it's pulled, you can't go back. And once you burn a relationship or someone gets a bad impression or goes, oh, those guys are cute, they're a good bar band, but they're not quite ready for X, then you may have to do extra work to work on that reputation.
Well, and you said self-reflection, but I think that information about your own music doesn't have to necessarily come from yourself. You know, you could ask your engineer or your producer if you've worked with one while recording. You know, I guess if you're probably starting off, maybe you'd record it yourself. But ask other bands and just, tell them to be brutally honest with you so that, and pay them in beer or something so that they're loosened up a little to actually be honest with you.
Yeah, you got to get people that will be honest with you. Tip, your mom is not the one. She will not be honest with you. She loves you dearly and wants nothing more than you to succeed and thinks you hung the moon. So she's going to love your music no matter what you do. So go out to some other people that will give you honest feedback and help you judge where you're at with that.
I had a thought about your previous point when you were talking about setting realistic goals for sort of where you're at in life and what you want and how you're going to get there. If you're in a band, you have to have those conversations with everyone because, you know, you might want to be playing a stadium and the drummer thinks it's a weekend gig or something. And if you have big dreams, like you have to usually make big sacrifices for that. So you want everyone to be on the same page. You want your families or, you know, work situations to be in line with that goal. Cause.
And sometimes some of those things are unspoken because I've been in many various independent bands here in Portland playing with folks. And while somebody's saying, yes, I'm on board. Yes. Everything in their life and a lot of their actions are saying the exact opposite. So sometimes it's, you know, a collection of anecdotal evidence and not just what they're saying, because a lot of times people just don't want to be the guy that's the Debbie Downer or the one that's not, is not a part of the team, that's, you know, going to be the problem person people are going to have to accommodate for. And so they'll just say yes to be agreeable. So you really have to discern what's going on there because you could get to a situation, you're starting out and you're like, hey, we've got a couple gigs. Hey, people loved it. The bookers are asking us back. We're doing some gig swaps. And suddenly you're like, hey, we've got this 5-city, 10-city, 2-week tour going down. And suddenly he's like, no, man, I'm not onto this. And you're like, what? You said you were, kind of thing. You got to really make sure that as you build this thing, you can represent yourself well. And there's no reason that you're having to call somebody and go, never mind, our drummer flaked, we can't play. That you don't want to make that call.
Yeah, and this might seem like you're skipping ahead a lot of steps, but I feel like a band agreement that involves all the kind of awkward and sometimes painful discussions that you'll eventually have to have if you are a success, you should have those before, you know, preferably before you even put your album out, but as soon as possible. So like, what does everyone want? What are you willing to commit to get to it? What if it doesn't happen? You know, like maybe one member is like, I'm totally in, for a year or something. And if we don't hit these mile markers, you know, my commitment will wane at that point or something. Just whatever it is, get it all out on the table. Who owns the band name? Who owns the songs? If you start making money from record sales or gigs, like how are you divvying it all up? Do that right now. Because if you don't, you're going to, you know, have a lot of pain and anguish later.
Yeah. Another tip that I've got is it's kind of two-parter. It has to do with paying attention to what other artists are doing. One, get to know people in your music community, in your city that are in the genre you're at, that are playing the clubs you want to play. Just get to know them. Go offer to help them load in or out. Tell them that, hey, you're just getting started. You're interested in playing this club and just wanted to, you know, help some bands that are playing there. You know, just whatever you can do to get to know some people, start building a community, because a lot of times those are the bands that give you that first good gig. It's like you might be able to get some random coffee shop or some other venue that's, you know, not a desirable place to play, but a lot of times that first gig at a good venue comes from relationships where a more established artist asks you to open up. So that is part one, is the local community. But part two is to pay attention to what artists in your genre are doing and the communities they're, you know, in online, and some of the strategies they're employing for your genre group, whether it's major label artists, which, you know, I take that stuff with a grain of salt because they have like marketing machines behind them. Right. But if you're looking at like, hey, here's a very established independent artist who's doing it full time, same genre, they tour the country, the world, what are some things they're doing? Pay attention, look at what they're doing, and try to find patterns of success that you can also jump into.
Yeah. And so in terms of finding your kind of local tribe of bands, you really, if you're trying to play live, you've got to make up a lifestyle, at least for a little bit of time, you know, maybe a few months of going out to the shows all the time, checking out all the bands, meeting people, and just being, you know, you don't always have to be super hungry and, you know, telling every band you like that you want to open for them. Just get to know them. Just be cool. Become friends, you know?
Be a respectable community member and be a contributor before you're an asker.
Right.
If that is a word.
be a good hang.
That's right. Yeah. Be somebody people want to go, oh, there's so-and-so. That's cool. They came out to the show. I look forward to chatting with them after the gig, as opposed to, oh, man, there's that. All he does is run right up and say, when can I open up for you guys? That's not what you want to be. Be somebody that's contributing to the community. It's a long game there. It takes a while to see results from it, usually. Sometimes it might be like, oh, yeah, we got an opening slot next week. But you know, sometimes it's going to be more something that is going to build over time and you're going to need to invest in. I've only got a few minutes left. I've hit most of my main ones. Do you have a few more?
Well, I was going to talk about getting press.
Okay, let's talk about that. I've got 5 minutes. Can we do it in 5 minutes?
Sure.
All right, let's do it.
So I would say the thing for me that made the biggest impact is early on when I was in Portland, I recorded a solo album, and I didn't really know a whole lot of people, but, you know, I believed in the album. I sent it out to the local weeklies and this thing called Portland Music Project. It was kind of a local rag. Anyways, and it got pretty much unanimous great press. And I had never played a show, you know, a proper show under my name. I didn't have any name recognition, but I got great press. And suddenly I was able to use that to get gigs. You know, I'd put it in the bottom of my email, or I started a website and put some of that press up there. And suddenly I think to people, it looked like I was a somebody, and that, you know, I fooled them all. So, I can't, what's the word? I would say, if you've done the self-assessment and you feel like your music is good, make an effort to send it to your local newspapers, your local weeklies and all that. Because if you get a good response, it can really help.
Yeah, getting some other website that's related to music or publication to write anything about you or your music is very helpful. And so, you know, Chris and I were talking about this before we started recording, and I was thinking, don't be afraid about going too local. Like, here, we're in, CD Baby's in Portland, Oregon. Portland has, you know, their big newspaper called The Oregonian. Well, I actually live, you know, across the river. It's almost like a suburb in Southwest Washington. And there's Vancouver, Washington. And they've got their daily paper that's not as big as The Oregonian, but it's a step down. But where I actually live is a smaller town that's, you know, like 10 minutes away from there, that has its own little weekly newspaper, more of like locally news. It's, you know, it's kind of fun to read. But nobody knows that the Camas Post Record is not a big publication, but it's an official publication. So I could probably get them to review or say something about me as an artist or write an article about me any week, because they're probably dying for something to write about in these really small town newspapers. So don't just think about the big paper that I'm going to get so many eyeballs. Think strategically. What you need is something that shows that there's you are pursuing a career. People have heard of you. This is an established artist. You didn't just post this stuff online last night. And so those things, don't be afraid of thinking small, and very, very local think strategically. You're trying to find something that is an indicator to people that you are a legit artist.
And once you've got the good quote, go back to your domain, start your website, put that quote up there. You're very legit in the eyes of whoever's visiting now. And then maybe you use that to get a gig. And when you have a gig, make sure you have started an email list and capture those email contact information from your fans.
Yep. More important than, I mean, you want to lock up the social network so people don't take them and squat them, but getting an email list, more important than being on social networks. I've got to run. I hope this was helpful. If you've got more questions about how to get your career started, how to get things rolling, feel free to email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. And make sure when you call that listener line that you kind of know what you're going to say and you limit it to about 2 minutes. We've gotten quite a few calls lately, but I haven't been able to use them because they've all gone. There's like a 3 minute limit. They've all run over and then they started another one. And it was like, I'm not going to do a bunch of editing to try and figure out. I don't want to cut people's words up and make it sound like they're saying something they may not have intended. Just try to make it brief, to the point. Ask a question or comment, and we'll definitely get it on the podcast. So 360-524-2209. And then you can also leave comments on the podcast website in the show notes at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. All right. I hope that was helpful.
Meeting.
Yes. More meetings. Meetings, meetings, meetings. And don't forget, DIYMusicianCon.com. Get your conference tickets. You won't regret it. And I hope to see you in Nashville. And we'll talk soon on the next podcast.
See you then.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.